KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
Territorial and personal shifts, identity and social and urban conversations, and the public is invited to the opening reception on February 28th from 1 to 4 p.m. For more information about events and programs, visit sjica.org. Appreciate yourself some art.
That's right. And okay, this is going to sound very weird for the live audience right now. So this message is actually for people in the future on the podcast. And for whoever's doing this out there, if they are listening, I don't understand why on our recorder you turn the volume all the way down, because it was all the way down. So the recording will be completely silent. So so for the podcast listeners, you just missed all of our introduction of what we've been up to. So you're listening to this now. That's what we were talking about, and now we'll kind of move on from there. But so my message is, whoever's doing that, I don't understand why you would do that. Please don't do that anymore. I will take partial fault for not looking at it, but it is usually up enough.
There's something to work with.
Yes, but I don't. It's happened. It happened like when we came back or one of the other shows. I caught it, thankfully, earlier, but
technical difficulties, folks. We apologize.
Yeah, I don't
enjoy the rest of the show.
Anyway, speaking of the rest of the show, we've got a fantastic show for you.
Oh, yes.
We've got, of course, our watch party, our brand new one, the first episodes of 1 and 2 of The Devil's a Part-Timer.
Which is a great title for a show.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting into it and seeing your thoughts on it and stuff like that. And of course, because it is the watch party, if you had a chance to watch the first and second episode as well, we'd love to hear your thoughts too.
Yes, please do throw them into the comment section on facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. Let us know what you thought, what you think. Just, we want your feedback. We want to know where you stand.
That's right. Because that's kind of the point of why we started it. In the first place, we've done it a couple times already. This is the third time. And it was just a chance to, another way, a segment, you know, to get the audience involved.
Yes.
And what's nice is it's kind of like you don't have to be listening live to, you know, participate. It's like, okay, you got a whole week to watch, you know, the two episodes, and then you come back with us and you could, you can hit us up live or you can hit us
in
up
the future.
Throughout the week.
Exactly.
About it. So, okay, let's see. Well,
jump in new releases?
You want to jump in there? Or you want to take a music break?
Let's do a music break and then do a new music releases.
Okay, because we did throw a lot at them.
Yes.
And maybe they're like, you know, getting together all those links and stuff like that. So this gives them a chance to check it out. But
exactly.
All right, we're going to take a music break and then we'll come back with more of the show.
Yes.
All right, we'll be back. More Robots Attack right after this. Want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio? Stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
Find us faster by searching for KSCU. Our call letters are unique to us on the globe.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. We are now in our brand new watch party.
Whee!
That's right. We're going to discuss the first and second episodes of
Devil is a Part-Timer.
That's right. An odd sort of title for, you're like, wait, huh?
Yes. It definitely catches one off guard in that way that says, this show is not going to be exactly what it sounds like it would be from the title.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. and it's weird. It's like if you see any pictures of it, mm-hmm, and then start watching the first episode and not like, say you don't really know a whole lot. You're like, wait, what is going on? This isn't, mm-hmm, like, this looks nothing like the pictures that I see on the box art or, you know, mm-hmm, whatever.
Or the splash page or, uh-huh, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. That was sort of a, it does eventually get to this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it does. And so,
that's right.
But
it does. Yeah. So our first episode, yeah, it jumps, you know, it's sort of a fantasy kind
of deep in the lands of mystery and yore. There was four islands or five islands and stuff like that.
Yeah. So it's kind of got your taste of a fantasy anime right there,
mm-hmm,
right off the bat, you know, and with the
very Record of Lodoss War kind of,
yeah,
feeling.
Yeah. You got your magic and your knights and swords, mm-hmm, and sorcery and all that.
Demons
stuff.
And the devil prince, like the conquering,
yeah,
being.
And that's what's interesting about this, because it's clearly, the first part doesn't take place on like Earth as we know it.
Yes.
Maybe this is some other dimension or something, but it's clearly not the Earth that we know of.
Yes.
Because
it might even be an alien world for all we know.
Exactly.
The geography is completely unlike anything that we know.
Yeah. So it's the main character, mm-hmm, has, you know, is the devil,
the
but
devil.
It's not really the devil that
it's not Dormammu or Beelzebub. It's
yeah, it's not what we sort of know of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's but yeah, it and he's in whatever plane that is, you know, he's the big bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's got this
four demon generals that,
yeah,
he sent out to with armies to conquer the world.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the kickoff.
But then a hero arrives
with a holy sword with which the hero then begins to take down the
yeah,
generals.
Each of the generals and,
yeah,
stuff like that. And each, like, while this is happening, you know, it's telling it a voiceover, but with, you know, the mm-hmm, pictures and stuff. There's action and stuff.
Some
like that.
Some really nice animation in there too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just still sort of throwing me off, like, okay, I know it eventually gets to what the synopsis of the anime is, but
which is the devil being a part-time worker in modern day Tokyo.
Yeah.
And you're like going, well, keep watching this. This isn't Tokyo.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Their version of McDonald's. It's like, mm-hmm, McRonald's or,
yeah,
something. but yeah. So like in a, was it him or was it one or his,
His last general opened, pulled back. He opened the portal because he still had the most magic power available,
okay,
at the time.
That's right. So he opens up the portal and you don't know where. The other thing that was throwing me off too is, mm-hmm, when they started talking, I was like, okay, I know I'm not fluent in Japanese,
mm-hmm,
but I've watched enough anime that, like, I can kind of,
you know what,
okay,
it sounds
this
like.
Is, yeah, yeah. This was like, I was like, wait a minute. This isn't Japanese, right? I'm like, I was questioning, yeah, myself. Like, no. This sounds different. Like, it's
wife said the same thing. Like, what is with their accents?
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to figure it. So,
then they launch themselves through the portal.
Exactly. Now, actually, I should ask: did you, mm-hmm, watch dubbed or subbed? Or
I watched it on Netflix, and so it defaults to sub.
Okay. Yeah, I watched it sub as well.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, if you didn't, then I don't know if it, like, that sort of conversation would, mm-hmm, be, you know, irrelevant as far as,
yeah, I wonder if they, with how they worked that out. I may have to go,
yeah,
back and watch one of the episodes to see what it looked like.
Yeah, if it's just some, because I was just curious, like, was it just some made up like fantasy language, you know, like
that's my suspicion.
Elven and,
yeah,
Orcish and, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so then when they arrive, they're in human form, mm-hmm. when previously they were fighting the humans,
yes.
you know, trying to take them over. So
they were humanoid,
exactly.
but they weren't human.
Humans. So when they obviously when they show up as humans, it's mm-hmm. kind of a shock to
yes, and also they're not only do they're physically shifted from one place to the next, but they realize that magic doesn't work quite the same here, and
yeah.
that led some very amusing first moments on Earth.
Exactly, and that was kind of one of the cool things about it, because a lot of times in mm-hmm. some of these where like they get teleported to here or somewhere
right.
else, like they still can use like the like it doesn't mm-hmm. seem like you know they're affected too much as far as what their abilities are. So it was interesting,
yeah.
like these they were pretty much void of magic now mm-hmm. you know the what does he end up naming himself like
Saba something I'll verify that while
okay.
while we move on,
but yeah the devil quote mm-hmm. unquote, I mean it's hard sort of saying that because it's like I say that if someone's listening in they're like they immediately think of the devil
guy
that
in a
we
red
know,
suit and
but
horns.
It's not. It's
yeah.
It's, so that's why I want to find out the name that he
Sato.
Sato.
Yeah. Sato okay. Ma'u.
Sato Ma'u. Okay.
So we both have, right. There was a Sa and
okay.
a Ma.
So Sato when he can use magic just because mm-hmm.
he
in his
so much
realm
more, yeah.
he was kind of the top dog, but now here it's like he can use it, but it's so hard, and it sounds like he has you know
only so much of
so
it left.
Much of it. So he decides to use it. Well, what's funny when they first show up, it's like the police like see them and they're like, "Oh, you guys are hurt," and then they're like, speaking like, "Oh, these guys are foreigners. I think they're cosplayers."
Yes, because they're all speaking their native language
and they're dressed in like fantasy. You know, mm-hmm. just imagine if someone walked off the set of Lord of the Rings or
yes.
something like that, you know.
And then like, when the police officers speak, they're speaking Japanese as
yeah.
we understand the sound. Like, oh, good, it wasn't just us.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They were actually speaking another language.
Exactly. As soon as they started speaking, it's like, okay, I wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they, Sato, right?
Sato.
Sato eventually, like, just has to, he's kind of forced, he has to use his magic basically to mm-hmm. to learn about, he kind of like hypnotizes one of the cops
yeah.
to kind of find out, okay, where are we, you
mm-hmm.
know, what's going on in this place, how does things work, that
right.
sort of thing.
Gets the crash course and what's it like in the modern day Earth.
Exactly, like, oh, okay, we need money.
What's
we
this
need...
paper stuff? That is currency.
See, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So
I think one of my favorite bits from like them, like, you know, coming into like quote unquote modern day Earth was when they go to the realtor the
oh
just like the whole exchange of he's like the devil is trying to speak Japanese and he's mostly getting it
yeah
and
yeah
and then his general's like, oh, you can speak their native tongue, and he's like, of course I can, speaking foreign languages is but a small thing for me.
Yeah.
But he's like, they're all speaking in their native language. And then he's like, all like super focused and intense.
Yeah, he's all loud. Like, oh, I get. Yeah. And his.
Like classic, like foreigner in a strange world trying to speak the language, quote unquote.
Exactly. Yeah. And his buddy, I forget his buddy's name, but basically, you know, his kind of last remaining general, when he tries to like use his magic is, you know, I was like, oh, these humans, don't touch me, blah, blah, and he's like
mm-hmm.
posing and doing moves that would normally like be cool, quote unquote, because
yeah.
magic would be shooting out of his hands or that sort of thing, and he just looks silly. It's like,
yeah, Shiro.
Okay, Shiro. So he kind of, the exposition-ish sort of dialogue gets... they use the sort of trick of the Sato
mm-hmm.
explaining to his general, like, okay, this is how
mm-hmm.
things work. This is what we need to do.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
And which I give him credit for finding a fairly natural way to take a lot of exposition, cram it into dialogue, and it doesn't feel completely, here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, it makes a degree of sense, and they work enough, like, timing and comedic moments in it all that you it's still very enjoyable to watch them interact with the modern age.
Yeah. Yeah, what's sort of interesting is, since we never really get, like, the only, at least so far,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
the only time we see Sato, like, in his prime, like, in his, in, you know, in his realm, mm-hmm. it's just kind of that opening part. So
right.
you don't really get, like, a whole lot of his personality, like, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I was...
He has kind of a Darth Vader vibe in the other world, where he's, like, the menace that you see, and you're like, oh, that guy's menacing, as opposed, like, but you don't really know what he's like.
Yeah, and then, but then when he jumps here, mm-hmm. he's, like... You can see he's like planning every little thing out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, we need to do this and this, like
the strategist.
You know. Yeah. And cuz they're so far cuz in that episode I'm trying to think, like, he sets up is was it the first one that he sets up, like, it's like, okay, you go off and research magic and I'll go
yeah,
and get
yeah.
a job
mm-hmm.
and
yeah, the that one, like the established, so they figured out how to work within the world, how to get a bank account,
yeah,
how to find an apartment, and then they're like, I think at one point they both go off trying to find work, and the general guy just doesn't quite have the same ability to adapt to the situation that
yeah.
Sato does, and so he's like, you were always smart, you go use your brain and figure out how to get us out of get us our magic back, and I'll figure out how to keep us fed.
Yeah, which.
is also for him using.
Yeah, it's they're not exactly rich whatsoever. Like,
no, and I think that's one of the most interesting, like, kind of like unexpectedly delightful parts of the show, in that it's very much like if you have worked in food service, this will feel like almost painfully familiar. Like like, oh yeah, I do kind of remember like. Being like that, like, you know, you're literally paycheck to paycheck, your
yep.
rent is like, okay, if I eat only this for this week, I can make rent, and then
yeah.
I can have that next week.
Yeah, what their fridge was like, milk, pickles, or
yeah, cucumbers. And
cucumbers, that's right. Some kind of...
And tofu, I think.
Yeah.
It was... yeah.
How do you expect us to live on... this oh yeah because that was the other thing, like
mm-hmm.
Sato passes out while
right.
and then they have to spend like a whole month's worth to get the IV because mm-hmm. he didn't have any idea that this body requires food, like,
exactly. Yeah. Well, which cements he's never been human before, but yeah, you were saying.
Yeah, oh no, I was just saying, while the general, because back at the police station, mm-hmm. he was like, when he went into the room, he was like already eating the food.
Oh yeah,
like,
he was chowing down on that donburi, which actually looked really good. I'm like,
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, especially he was like describing it as like, oh, this looks like fish wrapped in some kind of breading.
Katsu donburi, nice. They've baked it in gravy and then cooked it again with some sort of egg on top.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yes, give me all of that.
Some sort of mashed, yeah. Like poultry egg or something,
mm-hmm.
like. But
so that's kind of basically episode one. They kind of like setting the stage for
pretty much
for what's going on,
and it ends kind of like on a little like, whoa, like the
right
the arrival of
the hero mm-hmm.
who was tracking him down and killing off all of his generals in the
mm-hmm.
in
the other
the
world.
Beginning, yeah,
yes,
in the other world, and it's I guess because they never really, I mean, I got the idea they never really kind of revealed the hero much in that opening, right?
Nope.
The hero was
always
sort of
in
fighter
full
armor and stuff like
big
that.
Old sword, so no idea who that is.
So the reveal of it was a woman who now mm-hmm. we don't know again since like their body sort of changed, like, I don't know mm-hmm. if hers was any different than in that realm also, because, like,
she was supposed to, as far as I tell, she was supposed to be human, so she may not have had as difficult a transition in terms of her body being changed.
It's just hard to say because she,
it's true,
did they, I can't remember if they ever implied that the hero was human or
that's a good point. They, by About the only information that we got about the hero in the opening was that the hero carried a holy sword and was beating the armies, yes. leading the charge against the armies. So, a lot of mystery around the hero right now.
Yeah. So, and it's when she shows up, he gives her his umbrella,
mm-hmm.
like while he's riding his bike.
Oh yeah, because he's riding home in the rain, and he hit with his umbrella, and she just has her purse over her head trying to keep dry.
Yeah,
and he does the honorable Japanese thing and hands her his umbrella.
Yeah, it's basically you're just thinking like, oh okay, here's good. Give her umbrella, blah, blah, and then it's like, bam, oh, it's the hero. Like, wait, what?
Yes. And I also like that how he's completely unfazed by the fact that she's the hero.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's you. What are you doing here?
Yeah. That's the other thing that's interesting too is, like, I'm curious how, if they're ever going to do anything about it or if that's just part of his character of just like he never seems like phased about anything really,
mm-hmm.
like very little things, you know, in this first episode, but
right.
really a lot of it was just even insurmountable odds. He was still like, it didn't seem like it phased him too much.
Yeah. So. He definitely knows how to roll with a punch.
Yeah. So, before we get to the second episode,
yes,
we have a PSA.
Ooh, what's that?
Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
Cool.
So now we jump into
episode two. And this is where it starts getting kind of interesting in that it broadens the palette of what's going on. Like, for one thing, we find out a little more about what life is like for the hero. And like, as much as like, it's one of those where the moments where the hero finds out that they're pretty much in the same boat as the bad guy in this, and wherever they are.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like she has a better job than mm-hmm. he does, but like they kind of play off the thing where since Sato showed up with, what's his name again? The general,
Ashiya,
like the fact that they had each other,
mm-hmm.
they're kind of playing up that a little bit while she like came in and while again, you know, was able to get a, you know, better job. It seemed compared to, mm-hmm. to him.
Tech support questionable, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But still
working at Meg Ronald's or something.
Yes.
Looking at it. And that's not the only other one. There was like Holly Potter or something like that.
Yeah. There's a bunch of like little Easter eggs scattered throughout this.
Yeah.
The show. Watch the backgrounds. Because one, they're beautifully painted, and two, they have some good back jokes in there.
Yeah, they play up the. I think the second episode was it the like he's trying to be, make sure his store is number one in the.
He's
area
trying to raise in management so he can take over McDonald's and then take over the world. Yeah. That's his plan
by winning the like. Black pepper fries, like selling the most of those because those are like the special thing this month, and so
right.
if their store sells the most, you know, they
get a promotion, you
know, yeah, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I love it too when he comes down to like, oh no, the fryer's broken, and he's like starting to freak out a little bit of like, oh no, like should I use magic?
Yes, like, to make this happen.
Yeah.
And then that's also when you realize that the hero has sort of a, because she has no one else to work with, is sort of a stalker of of Sato and Ashiya, because since she has no one else to, like, she's kind of making friends at work, but because she has that hero's dedication, quote unquote, she's like
because she's afraid, like, oh no, what's he gonna do? Is he gonna mm-hmm. try and, you know,
take over the world here? Is he gonna do the same thing to this world he did to mine? Never.
Exactly. So she's got to watch him
mm-hmm.
as much as she can when she's not. So
right.
she's like, oh, I saw you almost use magic.
Yeah. Like, and he's like, huh, what?
Yeah.
And then she pulls a knife on him. He's like, wait, is that the knife from the 1,000 yen store just down the street? She's like, doesn't matter. Yeah. What happened to your holy sword? Not important.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm still the hero. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was just kind of funny. I'm just like, oh, should I use the magic? It's such a, you know, resource. And they, mm-hmm. you know, they cut to the general guy's like, remember, don't only use magic in emergencies. And it's like, oh,
this
still
might be an emergency.
Yeah. Oh, should I use it to fix the the yeah. fryer?
And then, like, the other thing is, like, him and in the break room, he's, like, all depressed, like, oh, we didn't make it. Yeah. This is awful. I'm a failure. And, like, the inevitable, like, cute young sidekick girl sort of character, like, it shows up about around this time.
And, yeah, yeah. She, and of course, she's has a crush.
Mm-hmm.
Crush on our
hero. Hero, or other hero?
Yeah. The main character.
Yes, there we go.
For now. Yeah. Yeah, because that's what throws you off on this one. Because he, in the first episode, like in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, you hear this stuff about these things that he, you
the
know,
devil's here to conquer the world.
Yeah, doing all this stuff. And then in this, it's like, he's been friendly. He's been mm-hmm. nice. Like, he hasn't, like, gone out of his way to, like, you know, like, oh, I'll destroy some this or that, you know, just because I'm bad. Like,
mm-hmm.
so you're sort of like, well, maybe he's not really a bad guy. I mean, like,
it's like, is he kind of like just lawful evil at this point where it's like, yeah, he's not going to do anything wrong, but he's not necessarily the quote unquote good guy.
Yeah. So, and then I like it too. It just throws when he, when she ends up like, towards the end of the episode, like mm-hmm. they're attacked
right
by
right.
some sort of like magic bullets.
Yeah, like because the little yet. Glowy spikes. I'm like, well, that's yeah. not a normal bullet.
Yeah, wait, what is going on? And so mm-hmm. in that scuffle, she apparently lost her wallet. So mm-hmm. she's like,
can I crash at your place?
Yeah, which throws off the general guy's like, what? Oh, what is she doing here? How could you be so nonchalant about this? Or, you know, sire.
And he's like, yeah. She has a long walk home and she has no money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's so funny. Like seeing sort of the big bad guy, like that attitude of just like, meh, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't care. I know she like either, I don't know if it's just like, I know she can't do anything
mm-hmm.
to me or if it's just like,
I don't know. I suspect that his primary skill is really adaptation. Like he just adapts to what, as Bruce Lee would say, he is like water. When he is in the teapot, he is like the shape of the teapot. When he's in like in the cup, he's the shape of the cup. We must be like water. He's like water. He like this. It's like, oh, the shape of the world just changed. Okay, I adapt. And part of his adaptation, I think, in the human Earth is that he's. Just not trying to like forcibly conquer everything, partly because he has no ability to forcibly conquer everything. So he's like sort of like skirting around his inability to like raise up an army of goblins and ogres to slay the human population.
Yeah. It just, you could like, they could have gone that route, even though he's mm-hmm. like, I don't have the power, but oh, I'll still try to take over this. Like
mm-hmm.
there's ways. It's just interesting. Like, the route they're going
yes.
instead of sort of the way you would think. Like mm-hmm. even, you know, if the bad guy showed up and didn't have like his abilities, it's, you know, you would sort of think or like, assume. Oh, I'm still going to be, mm-hmm. I'm going to take over this. Like you do my biddings, you know, like there really isn't any of those scenes of him mm-hmm. like trying to, you know, subjugate somebody or something like that. You know,
yeah.
Like, he's just like, okay, this is what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do it. Like you wouldn't think
right.
the character from the opening would take a part-time job at McDonald's.
Right. or more in the fact that someone just punctured the tires of his bicycle because now he has to walk to work. Like, it's these, like, such mundane aspects of life that...
Yeah, it's like they almost... They use sort of his general to kind of do some of those things as far as him being like, oh, don't touch me, human, or, oh, why are we doing this? Or like, they kind of use that character to play out some of those instead of like the main person who they shows or movies or things kind of will typically do that. Like the bad guy's always got to be this big, like, oh, I've got to be.
Cobra Commander is always Cobra Commander, even if he has nobody underneath him.
Exactly. And we even have... from one of our listeners.
What's that?
Totally enjoying this anime so far. It's hilarious. Love the overly dramatic music for normal everyday stressors.
Yeah, seriously. Or just, like when his bike gets shot up in the attack, the magic attack where he's talking to the hero, they're trying to hash things out, like what's going on with us in this place. And like he's like stops and he's like, no, like, my bicycle. Like, he even named the bicycle. Like, one of the major purchases. Like,
I just got it.
And she's like, no, you can get that repaired for like 1,500 yen. Oh, like, where?
Yeah, that was just like, I can? All right. Like, yeah. Yeah, I'm enjoying it so far too. Like, it's like the, oh crap! What was it called? The first one we
Punchline?
Did. Punchline. It's kind of got me intrigued. Like, I'm curious where it's gonna go. You know, like with this, since it's a shorter series.
13 episodes.
13 episodes. Right. So I'm curious, like the route they're gonna go with this. Like, how far is it going to be? Like these two episodes, or is there going to be more? I mean, obviously, since this the end of kind of the second one with that attack, clearly there's some other people or something, you know, knows
someone else
about
came
them.
Through, yeah.
And like it seemed like they were both attacked, right? So or targeted. It kind of seemed like, so
yeah, it was a little bit uncertain who exactly was the focus, and was it actually attack, was it a warning shot, what's going on? And
yeah,
like, he got that weird text message at the end of the episode
saying, that's right,
that he needs to be more careful or something like that. I'm like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah, like who? Yeah,
who else knows?
Yeah, it makes me wonder, because they the hero, what was her, do you remember her name?
Her name is Emi Yusa or Yusa Emi if you do it the Japanese way.
When she followed him through, she was also going to have her friend come along too, but the gate closed. So I'm curious if like maybe they were able to get it open again, or someone else or something also got through, like, you know. I'll be curious if they're going to go, if anyone else from their realm ends up showing up or something.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a little nervous only because, like, sometimes you get some of these short, high-concept animes, and, like, they're really strong in the beginning, and then at the end, they just sort of fall apart.
Yeah. I hope they don't spend a lot of that kind of middle just, like, him working at the fast food place, like... and not really like progressing the story until, like you said, like maybe the last couple, and then it's like, boom, here's a whole bunch of stuff. Like, maybe you could have spaced this out a little better, but
yeah.
So
yeah, the one of the things that has definitely impressed me is the quality of animation for this. Like, obviously it's a shorter show, 13 episodes. They can double the budget on the animation for half the number of episodes, but still it's a surprisingly good animation for the fact that it's just effectively talking heads for a lot of things, but they've, like, whenever, like, there's a couple of one or two scenes where it's the devil talking about, you know, like, he's saying, I will conquer this world by being the head of McDonald's or whatever. Like, but, like, the artwork that they do, that they, as they animate that, like, you can see that he's, like, serious about that, but also, like, you can kind of tell, like, it just. The main thing is that there's a lot of like character in the way they draw and the way they animate, the way they move is part of who they are. And that's a nice touch, because sometimes you get like standard stock walk cycling. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So It's a strong start.
It's a very strong start.
First episode for Devil's a Part-Timer, so we'll have to see how it goes from there when we discuss episodes 3 and 4 next week.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like one of our other listeners, you can be as cool as that listener and participate with us on this watch party.
Right. You can go to twitter.com/robotsattackme or facebook.com/robotsattackshow. Give us an at reply or leave a comment.
That's right. And yeah, it's never too late to jump in, even if you're like, oh, you guys already talked about 1 and 2.
Yeah, that's cool. Give us your thoughts anyways.
Yeah, give us your thoughts. Jump in and catch up with us on 3 and 4 when we discuss that.
Yeah,
next week.
There's still in that quote-unquote usual half-hour time slot, it's about 24 minutes per episode.
So it's
not hard to catch up.
Yeah.
Easy to digest.
Blow by pretty fast, so.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. So that'll do it for the watch party. We'll take another music break, and then we'll come back with some new releases, and then, of course, we'll get into the news and all that stuff. So
yes. So keep it tuned here to KSCU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, The Underground Sound.
That's right. Be right back after the music.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook and check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. Let us jump into some new releases dropping this week. And what we do is we grab a handful of things, you know, and just kind of give you a little sample of what's dropping. And of course, it's not everything because, like we mentioned a lot of times, if we did that, it would be our entire show, and that's not the point.
Exactly. You
know? Okay, so I will tell you some stuff coming to the theater.
Theatre.
The Finest Hours. On February 18th, 1952, a massive nor'easter struck New England, pummeling towns along the eastern seaboard and wreaking havoc on the ships caught in its deadly path, including the SS Pendleton, a T2 oil tanker bound for Boston, which was literally ripped in half, trapping more than 30 sailors inside its rapidly sinking stern. As the senior officer on board, assistant engineer Ray soon realizes it is up to him to take charge of the frightened crew and inspire the men to set aside their differences and work together to ride out one of the worst storms to ever hit the East Coast. Then we have a completely, completely different direction, Kung Fu Panda 3.
Disaster to food.
Food, yes. When Po's long-lost panda father suddenly reappears, the reunited duo travels to a secret panda paradise to meet scores of hilarious new panda characters. But when the supernatural villain K begins to sweep across China, defeating all the kung fu masters, Po must do the impossible, learn to train a village full of his fun-loving, clumsy brethren to become the ultimate band of kung fu pandas. So check out the kung fu panda character from Warcraft.
Like, right.
Have him watch.
The Pandaren.
Yeah. then we have The Clan, the true story of the Puccio family who kidnapped and killed people in 1980s Argentina.
Ooh.
And to round us out, we have 50 Shades of Black, a parody of the popular film/novel 50 Shades of Grey.
Ah, there you are then. And if you're preferring something a little bit on the small screen, perhaps you'd be interested in The Experimenter in Blu-ray and DVD. The second feature from this past year, 2015, to be about a large and kind of disturbing psychology experiment.
Okay.
This one's about the work of Stanley Milgram, and it's a stylized reconstruction of his quote-unquote obedience experiments, where subjects are told to apply an escalating level of electric shock to a stranger.
Whoa.
Yes. In a slightly different bend, there's an Infinity Polar Bear on Blu-ray and DVD. It's about a bipolar father who tries to take care of his two kids while his wife is away at school. The performances of Zoe Saldana and Mark Ruffalo were praised, despite mixed critical reviews of this biopic. Then it's Sicario, I believe that's how you pronounced it, on Blu-ray and DVD. The title of the film translates to Hitman, and it's about an idealistic FBI agent that is rising through the ranks and brought into a special task force to take on a major drug cartel. But the events that follow shake her belief in her work. And then there is The Walk on Blu-ray and DVD. The true life story of Philippe Petit is presented in a new way by an all-star cast and featuring stunning, vertigo-inducing visuals that should thrill even on the smaller screen. Philippe Petit was the guy that did the tightrope walk between the World Trade Center towers in the late 70s.
Man, no way. No thanks. I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. If you want to see the actual real-life story, there's another movie called Man on Wire. Same basic principle, but told differently because it's a documentary That one's documentary. This one is an actual like theatrical presentation.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's PSA time. Ooh, so I'm going to give you the choice again.
Okay.
You want the Garden Railway, a message for SCU students?
Maybe the message for SCU students.
Okay.
Listen up, SCU students. Are you passionate about environmental issues and you want to start making a real difference in the world? BLEJIT, the Santa Clara Community Action Program Environmental Justice Group, focuses on the biggest problems of the world currently faces, climate change. Currently, the group is centering their focus on a campaign to eradicate SCU's investments in unethical fossil fuel companies. If this interests you, the BLEJIT meets on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. in the SCCAP offices, located at the top floor of Locatelli.
Okay, so I will do some video games. It looks like it's a kind of short week.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a game called Bombshell dropping this week for the PC and both. I guess now will be new generations. It's not really next gen because it's current now.
Yeah.
So, systems. And then we've got a game for the 3DS, a Final Fantasy Explorers.
Woo!
So if you need to get your Final Fantasy fix, there mm-hmm. you go. And then rounding out for just about everything.
Yeah.
Lego Marvel Avengers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do like to put that on in as many platforms as possible.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, they're kind of geared for everyone, so...
Mm-hmm. Be everywhere.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Marvel Avengers, that leads us right into our comic books. And this week from DC, there's a new one called Suicide Squad Most Wanted, number one. Ooh. It's a new 6-part miniseries that will highlight the core members of the Suicide Squad. In this issue, it's Deadshot, the world's best marksman, and Katana, a deadly blade in the shadows. And then from Marvel, it's Old Man Logan, number one. The future is a dark place for Logan. So much heartache. So much loss. But this dark future can be changed, and Logan is going to do what it takes to make the darkness fade.
Nice.
And speaking of the darkness, from Dark Horse, it's Hellboy, Winter Special 2016, number one.
Ah.
This special contains three stories, from top-selling author Chelsea Kane, another from Tim Sale, and the last one about a mysterious cave in Wyoming.
Whoa.
And then over at Image, it's Saga, number 33. Upshur and Doff are back on the case. And then from IDW, it's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 54. The effects of the mud animals are weighing heavy on Mikey, and Hob must choose a side.
Will Hob choose?
And that rounds out our comics.
Alrighty. And then I will wrap us up with some music. We've got Suicide Songs by Money. It's the second full-length release for the British trio. It was produced by Charlie Andrew. And then we have Hymns by Block Party. Kaylee Okereke and Russell Lizak return with a new lineup for the indie rock band's fifth full-length release. And I probably butchered both of those names. I apologize if they happen to be listening. Doubtful, but, you know.
You never know.
Putting it out there. Maybe someone who knows someone who knows somebody who knows somebody knows. I'm like, hey, man, that Robots Attack show, they totally butchered your name. But the dude did say he was sorry. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, totally cool.
That's what it would be like, you know, on the shows. It would cut to that happening. So I just played a scene for you in your mind. Imagine that while you were doing your stuff. So, all right. So that's the new releases.
That's it for new releases.
We'll take another music break, and then we'll come back with the news. You want to tease them a news story?
Well, for one thing, there is potentially a new planet. And also, what if Jurassic Park is real?
Whoa, okay. Both of those have me on the edge of my seat. Hopefully they have them on the edge of your seat. Unless you're driving, scoot back a little bit. Make yourself comfortable.
Relax.
Relax.
Two hands on the wheel.
It'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Check your mirrors.
Exactly. All right, we'll be back with more Robots Attack right after this.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack. We're in the news. Mm-hmm. Let's give them some news.
All right. So if you've been watching a little bit of the... If you know your cartoon history and are familiar with Marvin the Martian and his quest for Planet Ux, or Duck Dodgers in the 21st and a half century and their quest for Planet X, we may actually have found a Planet X.
What?
It's still gathering the data, but it looks like there is potentially a real ninth planet in our solar system.
Sorry, Pluto.
Yeah, it's a planet, or this astrological body, for lack of a better phrase, is about 10 times more massive than Earth, and it's orbiting about 20 times further away from the sun than Neptune is. So this one's like out there. There's a couple of objects out in our solar system grouping, our solar group, that look like that have elliptical orbits, which is one of the
signs.
One of the indicators that this might be a planet.
Okay,
because that's one of the reasons why Pluto got moved down to a dwarf planet, because it didn't have an orbit like everybody else does.
Mm.
All that and a myriad of other reasons that are interesting but not pertinent to this. But there's they've found what looks like an orbit. It has a unique orbit. Actually, one of the things that's really fascinating about this is, in one of the pictures that you can see at the link I'll post in just a second, is they map out all of the orbits of the current planets and the potential planets.
And
you get to see kind of like what they look what they look like and kind of why they have the traits that we're looking for in a planet.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was found by a couple of bright young lads down at Caltech, they're still gathering data, but there's some pretty good evidence that we may have found what looks like another planet that's out in the Kuiper Belt range of stuff. Now, if you're unfamiliar with that phrase, there's Sun, Mercury, Venus, Mercury, Earth, or Mercury, Venus, Earth.
Yeah, Mercury. Yes.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, and then Mars, and then there's the asteroid belt. Just outside of Mars, and then you get Saturn, Neptune, and then out past them, if memory serves, is where the Kuiper Belt lives, and that's lives is a relative phrase, which is it's another asteroid belt like thing, but it's kind of like at the farthest reaches of what we consider our solar system to be.
Okay,
and that's where Pluto kind of. That's where Pluto's address is, and that's a lot of people refer to Pluto as a Kuiper Belt object, a KOB.
Okay.
And these are also in that same like range of space. So
Did you say Jupiter?
Yes.
Okay, wasn't sure included in that.
Yeah. So, but like as you get to the outside rim of what we consider our solar system, that's where these objects are. And that's one of the reasons why we haven't really found them until now, because we're only just now making instrumentation sensitive enough and get and able to process enough data that we can actually say that's actually something that we recognize. Nice. So,
Yeah, I wonder how long it'll take them to find to find out more. You know, if they'll be able to finally say like, yeah, we've got more evidence. This is
And as we get more people looking in that direction to gather the evidence or the information, the data, then we'll have it should once people know where to look, a lot of people will usually check it out.
Yeah, that's true. That'll help. Like now that like, oh, we know, look, more people look over there. So it's not just the one.
Yeah. not just a few astronomers in one place. It's like, hey, friends over there and friends over there around the globe as we face the night sky on each side. Yeah, let's see what we can find. This is one of the things I find I love about astronomy is that like it's a 24-hour event because somebody somewhere is always on the night side of the planet.
That's true. That is true. Just because it's nighttime where we are, or daytime, you know, where we are, it's nighttime for someone else.
Exactly.
And speaking of finding things, you know, you mentioned finding stuff out there in space.
Space.
If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us. Whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
You can always find us faster by searching for our call letters, KSCU.
That's right. Okay, so my story, it involves a film from a film series that does take place in space. It looks like the costume designer from the Star Wars The Force Awakens reveals Captain Phasma's origins, like her outfit.
Neat.
Costume designer Michael Kaplan has shed light on the origins of Captain Phasma's iconic costume, revealing the outfit was originally designed for Kylo Ren.
He would have been all shiny.
Yeah. Quote, when I was trying to tackle Kylo Ren's character, I thought, what if he were the Lord of the Stormtroopers in bright, shining silver armor? Captain explained in an interview with Clothes on Film. However, director J.J. Abrams shot down the look after seeing a sketch by one of Kaplan's concept artists. While Abrams didn't believe it was the right look for Ren, Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy spotted the illustration on their design room wall and loved the look, saying, "What is that? It's fantastic." Following Kennedy's positive response to the sketch, Abrams created Captain Phasma and cast Gwendolyn Christie for the part. Kaplan also discussed the creation of Kylo Ren's actual outfit, saying, quote, I had a take on Kylo Ren's dark layered costume and hood very early on. However, the helmet and face were two elements that proved to be more challenging. Yeah, it's got to be difficult, like, with a series such as that where the costumes and the helmets are so iconic.
Yeah,
like,
they're so exactly the thing they are.
Yeah, it's like we have to nail this or because it's going to be everywhere. Like
yes. Yeah, that's a really good point. Like the fan props and also just the merch that will follow off of this. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's another quota. You have no idea how many designs and concepts we came up with that were shot down, he said of the helmet, noting he worked very closely with Abrams in creating its look. Quote, it's incredibly tough to come up with a mask that doesn't feel derivative of an existing superhero or to another iconic reference. And that, yeah, that's true at this point with so many superheroes and comics and Star Wars themselves. Like, you don't want it to people to be like, that looks just like a little knockoff of Vader or Stormtrooper. You know,
they just
like
smashed this helmet and that helmet together and made this helmet.
Yeah. Kaplan also briefly discussed Ren's cloak, revealing it was made out of a woven cotton that had been lacquered. Well, I wanted it to have a sheen to give it life in all the darkly lit scenes I knew were coming, he said.
Very cool.
Yeah, I know. I ended up getting the visual dictionary and kind of seeing some of the props and stuff like that. And then, like, reading the backstory to Captain Phasma's, like, armor as far as, quote, backstory of the Star Wars universe, not the actual, like,
the construction
real world
of it,
construction
right.
and stuff. So, yeah, that was interesting. Like, whoa, that they originally were going to thinking of having Kylo Ren.
Which would have also been an interesting take. But at the same time, I'm glad they didn't do that. Like,
yeah,
you can tell why they shot that down. But at the same time, that's it's such a cool look. I'm glad that they found a way to work that into the story.
Yeah, me too.
Plus, I would like to see more of that character. Partly because it's a cool armor, but also like whenever a character walks onto a scene with that much like visual presence, you kind of want something more to come from that. You want more story about where did that armor come from? Why does this character stand out so much?
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
Sweet. So, speaking of things that are shiny and metallic, I mentioned ancient objects that might be real. Okay. Well, in this case, they are resurrected through 3D printing, and they are cast in 3D printed in metal. One Alan Dr. Drummond, yes. He's been from the University of Chicago, is making effectively art pieces, but they are very accurate reconstructions of ancient fossils in metal, so that you can. And he created the figures from really accurate castings and renderings and scans of these creatures, the trilobites, the one that you see will see most of the pictures of, and then had them 3D printed and then turned into metal, and so what makes it kind of interesting is like normally when you see like a fossil of a trilobite, it's an impression in a rock, which is very cool. But it doesn't give you a sense for what was the volume of this object, how much space it take up. Like if you were to hold it in your hand, what would it look like?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where this makes them sort of quote unquote living fossils. It's like when you see a T-Rex skeleton, you know, assembled and curated in the Academy of Sciences lobby, you're like, oh, that thing, if it was covered in skin and muscle, would be quite terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, it's kind of like that extra dimension on top of the history. It's like these things, you know, some people like watch old movies and think, oh, when did the world become color? I mean, no one.
Yeah.
But like then you realize like, oh, all of those were shot in color. They just, the film itself couldn't produce it.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, and then it's one of these things like you start expanding what the idea of this object was or is and its significance, and it's really cool.
It's like you mentioned, like with the dinosaur too, thing of even just like, oh, here's some bones from a T-Rex or something. But then and you're like, oh, that's, you know, that's pretty impressive. Or it's like pictures. But then like you said, when it's fully assembled and I put it in, you actually like see it out of a rock or off of the page, and you're just like, whoa, like you actually take it in, like you said, how much the space it takes up and everything. You're like, wow, that's a lot bigger than it appeared on that picture. Like it was big, but
yeah, it's like you hold your textbook and you look at it and you see it like next to a tree, like, you know, for drawn for scale. Like, oh, yeah, that's a big thing. Then you see what, and like, oh, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's so fascinating in the way that we have the access to such technology and such tight renderings and scans of these ancient objects that we can do this is really, really cool and exciting for a lot of other things as well.
Yeah, it's cool when they can find well preserved ancient pieces of varying things and just like, oh.
Yeah, and now that we have like now with digital modeling now, like, you know, you can take this, like the Archaeopteryx, the famous like kind of like flat piece of fossil. Like we can now like kind of like you with computers like say, okay, the bones are doing this and this is like a compressed thing. So what if we were to like quote unquote put them back into their natural shape? Like what might this thing have actually looked like? And I just think that's super exciting. Like making history like take on a form other than a flat rock.
Exactly. And speaking of history,
what's that?
Doctor Who.
Ooh.
You know, he travels through time and space.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Doctor Who showrunner Stephen Moffat to leave the TARDIS.
Wow.
Doctor Who showrunner Stephen Moffat will leave the popular BBC series at the end of the next season in 2017. With Broadchurch creator Chris Chibnall taking over the controls of the TARDIS. Radiotimes.com reports that Moffat, the lead writer and executive producer on the series since its fifth season, in the show's modern run, mind you, not the like old when it original, will go out with one final 12-part series. They call them series. We call them seasons over here.
Right.
That 10th season will not air until spring of 2017, which means we will get almost no Doctor Who this year, 2016,
sad
except
face.
For the annual Christmas special will still air.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Something.
So that's something.
Mm-hmm.
Chibnall will take the reins on season 11 as head writer and executive producer with a launch date planned for 2018. Of course, it's way too early to know how things will play out for Peter Capaldi's 12th Doctor as far as this behind-the-scenes change goes, but it is a fair assumption to think 12 will regenerate at the end of Moffat's run so that Chibnall can bring his own Doctor, 13, on board. But we don't know. Speculation.
Yeah.
When Moffat's predecessor, Russell T. Davis, left the show at the end of season 4, his doctor, David Tennant, made way for a new face with Matt Smith. They're kind of basing like, well, you know, so this time off, probably.
A good time to transition
good
to
time.
New team. Yeah.
Exactly. It just depends, too. Maybe the Chibnall will want to still use Capaldi for a little bit more. You know,
I would not be sad about that.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll leave a little bit of this other part out because it's a little spoilery for those who may not be caught up completely yet. But there's a quote. I have decided to schedule Stephen's big finale series in spring 2015 to bring the nation together for what will be a huge event on the channel, said BBC One controller Charlotte Moore. 2016 is filled with national moments, including the Euros and Olympics, and I want to hold something back big. Want to hold something big back for 2017. So does that kind of make sense? There's a lot of big stuff going on, so they want this to be a big event for them. So you know,
makes sense.
He has a quote: "Feels odd to be talking about leaving when I'm just starting work on the scripts for season 10. But the fact is, my timey-wimey is running out," says Moffat. "While Chris is doing his last run of Broadchurch, I'll be finishing up on the best job in the universe and keeping the TARDIS warm for him. Took a lot of gin and tonic to talk him into this, but I am beyond delighted that one of the true stars of British television drama will be taking the Time Lord even further into the future." At the start of season 11, Chris Chibnall will become the new showrunner of Doctor Who, and I will be thrown in, a skip. Must be some sort of British term. Or slang. Chibnall is a self-described lifelong Doctor Who fan. He was a head writer and producer on the Who spinoff Torchwood.
Oh, okay.
And has written several episodes of Who as well, dating back to 2007's 42. So, you know.
Some pedigree.
The person, yeah. Person coming aboard isn't a complete Who newbie. So.
Not his first Who rodeo.
Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see his take on the Doctor Who universe, you know, his style from, so if you kind of go back and see and watch Davis's run, you know, and then Moffat taking over, and though Moffat wrote a few episodes in Davis's run, and then Chibnall wrote some in Moffat, so it'll be curious to see. And actually, it might be interesting to go back and find the episodes he wrote and go kind of maybe, you know, watch them if you're interested, just to see like if you notice a style, be like, I wonder if that's, you know,
if that's going to come back again.
Yeah.
So, but interesting to find out.
That's kind of the cool thing with Doctor Who is since they have that built in thing of the regeneration, it gives them a shot to try all this different stuff and still, as long as they do it right, they could. It's still Doctor Who. So
yeah, which was a pretty brilliant move on their part, I must say. Like, we want to change the actor. How do we do that and not like break the story? Well, why don't we make that a part of what they do? Oh, brilliant!
There we go. Oh, and before you get to your next story,
sure.
Speaking of something brilliant, if you're an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer, you can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that's building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. Through help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook.
Very cool. Now, what also is really cool? Robots. And I found an interesting story about robots. The fine folks at Boston Dynamics have been making some of the great robots that we've been able to talk about in recent days. They have done a lot of work with the DARPA robotic challenges. This one is a new application of one of the robots that has been through these DARPA robotic challenges. Specifically, it's Atlas. And Atlas is unique because Atlas is a bipedal robot, meaning Atlas is mostly like a human being, or the most human-like one they've made so far. Atlas still needs a fair amount of work to be convincing as a human being, but they're not trying to replicate humans just yet. They are trying to help the robots learn. This robot learn how to do a number of human things.
Okay.
In this case, clean up. They're trying to program the robot to learn how to use things like a vacuum cleaner, a push broom, all of these kinds of tasks that, you know, the ancient, quote unquote ancient 1960s like retro futurism stuff was like, and robots will do our our laundry.
The Jetsons.
Yes, the Jetsons is exactly. Yeah, the article even like harkens back to Rosie and the Jetsons, and yeah. Now there are some that might say, well, we're taking a multi-million-dollar piece of robotics and teaching it to sweep. What's the point of that? Yes, there is a certain amount of, like, why are we doing this? But in doing this, we learn about how we can make assistive robots for places that may not have as much or human contact in general. Like, you know, there's one of the bigger sources of robotics in the world, besides Boston Dynamics and some of the research groups out here, is Japan.
Yeah,
partly because they have a large segment of their population which is aging to the point where there's not quite enough human population to support them. Having an extra pair of hands that needs less food and drink and can, you know, be on call for more things is a really good idea.
Yeah.
And even out here, like, there are places, the Grand Robotics Challenge recently that they did where they tried to, where they were, the goal was to make a robot that could enter a nuclear reactor, not unlike to help keep some things like the Fukushima event from happening. Well, to prevent the extent of the damage, because according to research, like, as they went back over the Fukushima event, like, if someone had been able to get down to a certain part of the reactor, they could have closed it then stopped a lot of
prevent further
nuclear pollution. So, but because of the radiation levels so high, by the time a person got down there, they would have been overexposed if it was a human. So, like, if we can
make sense,
create things that can enter these sort of situations that we obviously would like to try and stop them from happening in the first place. But, you know,
if it does happen,
we want someone that can go down there safely and come back safely. And in the meantime, they will still be that robot that they build for that purpose will also be useful around the complex. You know, there'll be plenty of uses for this technology beyond, like, disaster recovery, although that's one of the primary sources of that they're kind of focusing a lot of their efforts on.
Yeah.
So,
it's
just really impressive watching this robot, you know, work with, you know, appendages and arms and, like,
is there a video?
Yeah, there's video lots of a number of animated GIFs of the, you know, watching it deal with human scale objects and, like,
okay.
Cause, like, they're using like standard ladders and push brooms and vacuum cleaners. So it's all things that we know, and we know how to manipulate almost instinctively.
Yeah.
And now we're teaching a full size human 2 year old how to use them. So it's really interesting watching the machine work through it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said too, like also helping the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, sometimes that's something you don't really think about while you're young, you know,
right,
sort of thing. But, you know, as you get older, certain tasks become harder, and if mm-hmm. you could have something that can help you, you know,
right,
cover some of those tasks, then you can be a little more independent, and you know
exactly. Yeah, and that's, yeah, and that's one of the other things, like, you know, helping people be human longer is an interesting side effect of involving more automation in the lives around us, which is kind of a almost backwards thought, but kind of cool at the same time.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, we got a few minutes left of the show. I mean, unless mm-hmm. there's a story that you desperately want to hit, should I wrap us up with this day in history? Or is there something else you want
to... Let me see if there's anything else that I'm dying to get out.
Because, I have another story, but I can always just save it for next week. It's no... Mm-hmm. There's no time stamp on it or whatever. Like, oh, we got to talk about it this week because it'll be irrelevant.
Let's see. There is something that I think I should cover because it's timely.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
It shouldn't take too long, and then we can wrap up with the day in history. The recently you may have seen in the news that Microsoft has made some announcements about the future of processors and Windows 10.
Mm.
There is a lot of confusion around this because the statements made were very... There is so much nuance to how this plays out.
Oh, okay.
That
I haven't heard it, so...
Okay, so the headline is Microsoft cuts off old processors, old hardware.
Okay.
They made a blog post talking about how with the next generation of processors from AMD, Intel, and one of the new ARM chips, I think, from I can't remember which company now, but they will be designed to run OS Windows 10.
Oh, okay.
And they say that they will not support Windows 8, 1, and 7.
Okay.
Now, this obviously caused a lot of people to kind of like hair on fire, and you don't need to light your hair on fire just yet. Yes, this is a big change, but this isn't necessarily the end of the world. They are like Windows 7 is almost 15 years old. Windows 8 is like 12 years old now. Like, these are modern or contemporary operating systems, but they're not very new. I mean, there's
it's crazy to think that they're
that old. Yeah. You think of those people that are using Windows XP that was designed in like, that came out in 2001, 2002. Like these, like, okay. So that would make that one like, yeah, 2001, 2002, that'd make them like 12 years old. Like, typically, it's like a 7-year lifespan for support of an operating system from Microsoft, like official support.
Okay.
If you're a corporation, you can pay for a longer span because corporations hate change because it disrupts a lot of things. There is good reason for it. They aren't just sticklers, although some of them. Anyways, the main thing is that this is one of the biggest changes that they've made in a while, where they are kind of like really kicking people in the pants pretty hard, saying, come on, guys, let's move on to the next platform. Uh-huh. And they've been pushing really hard on this because they want to make the one Windows experience, so that designers, developers, everybody, the IT management, everyone will be on one platform. There won't be like, oh, well, that's the Windows 7 box over there. That's the Windows 8 box. It's like, everyone will run 10. Now, if you buy hardware within the next little bit, like before July, I think, you will still be in the grouping of computers that is considered part of the Windows 7 generation, Windows 7 and 8. And with those, they will give you support up to a point on those. But once you move past that point, once the next generation chips comes out, they're going to say, we are not officially supporting this. Because of the way Intel and the x86 architecture and AMD, because of the architecture of the chip, there is a very good chance it will run on the new hardware, the new chips, but it's not going to be supported. And if something breaks, Microsoft will not fix it. So that's kind of where that's the main takeaway. It will a really good chance. Above 80% chance it will run, but if it breaks, it won't be fixed. If it's on the newest hardware, if you're back in the kind of the quote unquote current round of hardware, they're still fixing that one for the next, I think, 5 years. You're on 8, and in the next 2 to 3 years if you're on 7. So like I said, don't light your hair on fire, but we need to start making plans for the future, because the future is kind of now.
Alrighty. Speaking of the future past, I'll wrap us up with this day in history. In 1788, the first European, this day in history, January 25th.
Yes.
1788, the first European settlers landed in Sydney, Australia. 1802, Congress passed an act calling for establishment of a library within the U.S. Capitol. In 1837, Michigan became the 26th state in the United States. 1950, jumped to the India 3 years after gaining its independence from the United Kingdom, formally became a republic. Then we jumped to 1979, former Vice President Nelson Rockefeller died in New York at age 70. Then we've got 1988, Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Phantom of the Opera opened on Broadway. It would go on to become the longest-running Broadway show. Then 1993, Vaclav Havel was elected president of the new Czech Republic. Then 2001, a magnitude 7.7 earthquake rocked the Indian state of Gujarat, killing more than 20,000 people. And in 2004, President Hamid Karzai signed the new constitution of Afghanistan. All right, that's going to do it for this week on Robots Attack. Caleb, quickly, how can they participate on the show and all that jazz?
You can go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. And the best place to get all things Robots Attack is our own website, robotsattack.me.
That's right. All right. Take it easy, everyone. We'll catch you next time here on KCU Santa Clara. Raccoon. Veronica. Nicto.